Little music from years back, many years back, to bring us up to date. Creedence Clearwater there, if I'm not mistaken, with The Fortunate Son. Perfect song to get us going here. We actually have a focus on music for the whole 2 hours. To begin the show, we're talking about the music of the Vietnam War on the show. Larry Mueller here, by the way. Thanks for joining in. And two guests for you. Doug Bradley is a Madison-based Vietnam vet who has written extensively about his Vietnam and post-Vietnam experiences. He's, 30 years of experience as a communication professional in higher education, mostly at UW-Madison. Doug, good to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you. It's been a while.
It has.
Been a while for Craig Werner as well. Happy you could make it too, Craig. Thank you for joining in. Craig's a professor emeritus of Afro-American Studies at UW-Madison, member of the nominating committee of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame at one point. Are you still doing it?
No, I resigned, but yeah.
He's written liner notes for re-releases of classical soul albums, contributed to many radio and TV documentaries on topics ranging from the Harlem Renaissance to Motown. And together, one of the things they did together was to write the book, We Gotta Get Out of This Place, the soundtrack of the Vietnam War, which I think Rolling Stone, back in that day, in 2015, named it the best music book of the year. Good on you guys.
Yeah. Well, good for the vets. I think the thing, Larry, about that was the more we wrote drafts of that book, the more we got ourselves out of the way, because we wanted the men and women who took the time to tell us about their music-based memory and basically in the process talk about their Vietnam experience. It was a way to, I think, acknowledge that and their voices. That's what we felt good about.
Yeah. And this, you know, August, we're in August, the month of August. It marks some anniversaries related to Vietnam War. I think it was August 4th was the 61st anniversary of the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution. Remember what that resolution was all about, Doug?
Yeah.
Craig, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it was the incident in South China Sea, two incidents, actually, the first of which happened, the second of which probably didn't, that led Lyndon Johnson to go to Congress and request authority to fight the Vietnam War. He was approved, and that opened the door for a long, messy war.
Messy war. And I think it was in August of 72, the last U.S. combat troops left Vietnam. What do you remember thinking at the time as that happened?
Well, Larry, you know, it's a really interesting thing because I had left Vietnam late 71. And so we were sending troops home rather than expanding. I think people probably forget at one point, we had 550,000 troops in Vietnam. That is a big army. And now we're dwindling. We're going home. And sort of the notion was, you don't want to be the last GI killed in Vietnam. If we're leaving, you know, keep me alive. And so, especially for the combat troops who were in harm's way. And I remember being back here saying, finally, you know, guys are not going to get, well, they still got killed. But, you know, this part of that war is over. Let's stop. But we didn't. And they didn't.
Yeah. Well, today we're talking about some of the music of that time, Craig. And when people think about music from the Vietnam War era, you might automatically think about the protest music. But today, we won't be listening only to those kind of popular protest tracks. What music resonated with soldiers then and veterans today?
Yeah, well, the thing was that the music that showed up on the soundtrack of Vietnam films has a disproportionate impact on what people think about as the music of Vietnam. And one of the things we discovered very quickly as we were interviewing people for our book, and we've talked to several hundred veterans by this point, was that they didn't particularly need to hear that the war was a mess, you know. Sometimes they did, but what really spoke to them when we started interviewing them and tallying the songs that came up most frequently were songs like Leaving on a Jet Plane by Reeder, Paul and Mary, or My Girl by The Temptations, or Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, songs about missing home, wanting to get home, not nearly as political as the soundtrack that's kind of gone down into the mythology of Vietnam.
Yeah, and Larry, the funny thing was that all those songs that were also there, I mean, we have stories in the book about guys who had really rugged, determined, straight-ahead, by-the-numbers sergeants who also played the guitar and would sit outside some night and play Masters of War by Bob Dylan. And it was like, yeah, it was all there. The great thing about the music was, whether you stayed or served, participated or protested, we had the same soundtrack. And we had different takeaways from what that song meant, especially if you're in Vietnam. But that this universality of the music, and guys understood that there were people that didn't agree with the policy. Maybe not necessarily what they were doing. That's were some of that, too. But, you know, all that music was there. War by Edwin Starr, you know, Universal Soldier, you know, all the Dylan by... but it was like... it wasn't antagonistic in the way that I think a lot of people portray it.
So how did you then compile? We've got a list of 10 or a dozen songs here, and Lee Rayburn has his magic fingers ready to play some of those for us. He's wiggling them right now as we speak here. How'd you compile that list that you got for us?
We started out. We actually met at a Christmas party at the Vet Center in Madison, and Doug's son and daughter had both taken classes from whom we got talking about music. And all of a sudden, all of the guys at the party gathered around and started sharing their stories about the music. And so we sat down, went out to the terrace, had a beer, talked about saying, hey, maybe there's a book to be written here. And we started out by each of us listed our Vietnam Veterans Top 20. We thought we were going to do that to start it up with. And then once we started talking to people, it became clear that it was way more than 20. It was 200, there were probably 1,000 songs we mentioned in the book. But some of them came up again and again and again. Nancy Sinatra's These Boots Are Made for Walking, which I never would have thought of.
Came up a lot. We'll be hearing that a little later on. Cool. One of the songs, I don't know why it surprised me, but I Left My Heart in San Francisco by Tony Bennett. Well, let's listen to a bit of it, Lee.
I left my heart in San Francisco. High on a hill.
Oh, it calls to me.
Say it, Larry. You know, I'll be curious. I think your next guest will have something to say about music and memory and dementia, Alzheimer's, you know, that Tony Bennett had, yet he could still sing a song.
He could still sing a song. But why did this tune?
The early troops, remember, we're in Vietnam officially, 64 to 75. We'd been there pretty much right after the French, and even supplying the French in the 50s. The early advisors and some of the early troops that went to Vietnam sailed. You know, I left on a jet plane, flew to Vietnam. But the early and a lot of them would go out of San Francisco. And they were of that generation. A lot of these were... senior military. They'd been in Korea. They were a little older. And so Tony Bennett, World War II vet, you know, great voice. But that was sort of their music, their sound. And I think leaving San Francisco, a lot of them left their hearts in San Francisco. It was very literal. And so that song captured for a lot of them that whole notion of going someplace else, leaving, but also keeping something behind as well.
Yeah. I can imagine a guy on the troop ship leaving San Francisco and having that song run through his
big
mind.
Big time.
Big, big, big time. Well, there's another song about a city, Detroit City by Bobby Bear. And let's listen to that one for a bit.
Last night I went to to sleep in Detroit City. And I dreamed about those cotton fields and home. I dreamed about my mother, dear old papa, sister and brother. I dreamed about that girl who's been waiting for so long. I wanna go home.
There we go. What's amazing to me is I can remember all of those words. I wanted to burst into song as he was singing, but that would have ruined it for sure.
Hey, it's your show.
How did soldiers listen? You know, well, first, I can see where that would strike a chord.
Oh, sure. And one of the ways that the soldiers listened to music, of course, they listened to AFVN, they listened to the radio, they listened to tapes that were brought from new guys coming in or sent from home. But one of the things that they remember is, particularly those who were in the rear, remember the bands that played at the clubs, the enlisted men's clubs, and there was a repertoire that they pretty much had to do. Or else they were going to get booed off the stage. And there were a lot of Filipino bands. There were a lot of bands that were kind of like garage bands back in the States. I played with a garage band at the time in Colorado Springs. We played for a lot of soldiers. And there were songs that they wanted to hear. And genre didn't matter much. That, you know, that's a country song. Didn't show up on the rock and roll hit parade. But in Vietnam, that mix all came together, and the songs would get the vets singing. We saw that at a lot of the public events we did around the book where we played the music. People would just chime in and start singing. We did an event up at Lambeau Field. The Packers, we were in their team room, packed crowd. Our tape player went out. Didn't matter. The people could sing the songs just fine on their own.
Well, and Larry, as you were doing, as you were starting to sing yourself, that line, "I want to go home." So that's just, you know, we had assigned tours in Vietnam. We didn't go over as units. We didn't come home as units. We went separately, most of us. And I knew the day I got to Vietnam, November 12th, 1970, if I was lucky enough, you know, to make it through the year, November 11th, 1971, I was going to leave. 365 days. Marines had 13 months. You could extend. But so that notion of I want to go home. Yeah, I know when I'm going to go home, if I'm going to get there. The other thing that Craig alluded to with the cover bands was we had lucky guys like me in the rear. We had jukeboxes at some of the EM clubs. And occasionally, they would be the source of a little friction, because if somebody plays Bobby Bear 10 times in a row, he's going to get a beer bottle tossed at him.
Yeah. The black soldiers may not love that.
Oh man. Well, it's really fun. I was flashing on a few things. I was remembering when you were talking about limits. A friend of mine, rest his soul now, Ron Korfmacher, went over as he was a minister. Mm. And so he went over, and he was out in the field with, and he talked, and he wrote a book about his experience. But one thing that he mentioned was when you got to be a single-digit midget, which was under 10 days, and he had some good stories, and then one or two bad stories about that.
No. Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, guys had count. One guy told me one time when I was there that he had just broken 300 days, and I thought if I was counting down, I would go crazy. I mean, that's the thing; it would go drive you nuts. So I didn't have what they called a short timer calendar. I just wouldn't do it. I knew, just hoped and prayed that I was going to get there, but. You know, it's like I did not want to delineate this day by day by day, because like you said, sometimes you didn't get there.
Yeah.
That's a sad thing.
Yeah. I had another friend who, and I was thinking that, if I'm not mistaken, I think about of the people who went over, men and women who went over, about 20% of them did the fighting.
Yeah.
Larry, it's even crazier than that. Of the almost 3 million that served in that arena, over those 11 years, maybe 500,000 were combat troops. That's extending it. But that's all we, you know, that's war. That's what we see in the movies. That's what we know about. There were more of us in the rear, like me. Somebody had to write their stories. Somebody had to play their music. Mm-hmm. Somebody had to fly their helicopter. Somebody had to build their bridges. Somebody had to give more. So the ratio by the time I was, it's usually like 1 to 6, you know, 6 support. By the time I was in Vietnam, it was 1 to 8 or 9. Most of us were in the support. Now, it's not to say that, I mean, combat's the toughest and the roughest, and we know that's fighting and dying. And so, you know, that occurs. But the rest of us, you know, they had silence in the field. They got music when they got back to us. They gave us music. It was a wonderful thing.
I remember one really good friend of mine, Dean Helgeland, who went over, and he said, we got there, and they lined us up and said, and the sergeant or whoever it was said, "Who can type?" And there was a whole line, and he could type a little, so he took one step forward, and he was the only guy who stepped forward, and so he spent his whole time there typing reports and doing whatever. I think the rest of that bunch was out in the field fighting.
Yeah, one of the things that we also learned was that those numbers are what they are, but it doesn't mean that the people who were not combat guys were safe.
We talked
to one guy who was field baker out in the middle of one of the most dangerous areas where you could be, but because he was baking 20,000 loaves of bread a week or whatever it was, he didn't count as a combat guy, but he was getting shelled every night, same way as the rest of the guys there.
Well, they called me a combat correspondent. You know, I mean, sure, I had the air-conditioned jungle and I was back with the brass because they wanted air conditioning. But when I went out in the field and did a story, I'm a U.S. soldier. I'm the enemy. I mean, they could take a shot at me as well as anybody else.
We've got another song, and you know what? We should probably take a break. Have we taken a break yet? I don't think we have. Doug Bradley and Craig Warner are our guests today. We're talking about music of the Vietnam era. And you can join in. I've had a bunch of emails with some song suggestions or remembrances. You can join in, too. The number is 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.
These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you. All my bags are packed, I'm ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye. But the dawn is breaking.
Oh, Mary. What a voice. Peter, Paul, and Mary there on Leaving on a Jet Plane. How did the soldiers connect with that particular song?
Well, the connection, it's interesting, Larry, because, I mean, obviously, we left on a jet plane. I'm leaving on a jet plane. So for me, that song becomes me. And there's a line in there, you know, I hate to go. I don't know if I'm going to get back. So it's obvious that just fits. The wonderful moment that we had and what resonated for us was in 2010, the Green Bay Packers, the Oneida Tribe, the Veterans Museum, and Public Broadcasting had a LZ Lambo event. LZ stands for Landing Zone. It was a welcome home event for Vietnam vets. This is 2010. We've been home for a while. But, hey, better late than never. And when we were making the presentation, as Craig said, the sound system would sort of peter out. And when we played that song, the audience just sang the rest of the lyrics. And we looked at the wives holding the hands of their husband with tears streaming. And we realized that was a hard year for them, too. So the person taking the leaving and the person saying goodbye both had pain and worry for that whole time. So that song... And I think it surprised us that it came up so much. But when you think about it, the fact that we left on jet planes, we said goodbye, but also the people that waited for us to come back, that song was this sort of elasticity and connection that we needed to have. And it was very prominent in a lot of the conversations we had with vets.
And Lee played just before that, played These Boots Are Made for Walking by Nancy Sinatra. This assertive female voice here.
Yeah. It's a fascinating story. It's another one that I hadn't really thought of as a Vietnam song, but it comes up a couple of different ways. First of all, Nancy Sinatra was a major supporter of Vietnam vets. She played at reunions. She volunteered for them. She was beloved. She was pretty. And a lot of guys had pinups of Nancy Sinatra with the boots from the cover of that record.
Yeah.
But it also pointed to one of the things that we discovered, which is frequently songs had very different meanings in Vietnam and for the vets than they did on the home front. And "These Boots Are Made for Walking" was definitely one of those, because on one level, boots meant something very real to the guys out there in the field, walking with them endless miles. And there's also a line in there where she says, "You're lying where you ought to be truthin'." Right. And there was that sense that the truth was not being told about Vietnam. So she resonated on many, many levels.
Well, and I think to follow up just on what Craig said, and I think the thing for Nancy Sinatra was she went to Vietnam and she was a rock and roll star.
Yeah.
And when they came to folks like her came to Vietnam, she went to the hospitals and she saw guys that were her age whose bodies were broken and, you know, and were shattered from the war. And that was a real epiphany for her. I think it changed her trajectory of her career, but I also think it impacted her a lot emotionally. And as Craig said, she's become a huge supporter and the vets love her.
Yeah.
And going to Vietnam had a big impact on the other relatively small number of people who did. James Brown went in a very famous tour of it. Johnny Cash went, and Johnny Cash said that he considered himself a hawk when he went to Vietnam, pro-war guy. And he said, talking to the soldiers and coming back, he declared himself a dove with claws and wrote quite a bit about Vietnam, sang about it.
Well, one of the soldiers, there was a special forces medic, I believe Barry Sadler, who had a different kind of, a different song. You got that up, Lee? Let's play that one for a minute.
Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand, men who fight by night and day, courage take from the green beret, silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best.
So, Ballad of the Green Berets.
Well, when you think of all the tremendous music there was in 1966, we're dating ourselves, I know here, Larry, but we were all there. The best of the British Invasion, the Beatles, the Stones, they were always at the top of the charts. Best of Motown, the Temptations, the Supremes, Smoking the Miracles, Four Tops, and the best of country, Cash and Haggard, Jennings. That was the number one song of 1966. The Ballad of the Green Berets, and you can't dance to it. I mean, come on. but the thing was, Sadler tapped into something. A, he'd been there, so he knew as a Special Forces troop and his advisor what was going on. He stepped on a punji stick. He was recovering from some infections. He was back at Fort Bragg when it was being dedicated to JFK, who had been assassinated in 63, and sort of tapped into this notion of service and sacrifice. You can sort of march to that. It's elite, if you're a Green Beret. But now's the time that we sons of World War II vets, my dad was a World War II vet, so was Craig's, probably yours too, that they stopped fascism, we need to stop communism. So he was tapping into something in the American ethos that was, popular, and it resonated.
One of the things that we found where people were talking about that song is that several of the guys we talked to talked about how that song was part of what sold them on Vietnam, made them want to go do their duty in the same way that our World War II dads had, but that several of them talked about how bitter they were about it after they had been there.
Yeah.
They said the irony was just overwhelming. Yes.
We have several other songs. Mike in Appleton said his song is Where Have All the Flowers Gone by the Kingston Trio. Did that ever come up? Or
it comes up a lot, you know, at whoever's version. And, I mean, it's a Pete Seeger song, and it's just, it says it, what it is, and that is, you know, gone to graveyards, everyone. It's just the way that song progresses. And that was on a lot of guys' minds. I mean, we have a great anecdote that begins the book at the Siege of Khe Sanh, which is probably the worst battle of that war. 55 days of relentless attack. They were surrounded by an NVA army. Because of the fog, they couldn't get the air support in there they needed. So they were just hammered day after day. And there were guys on the top of, sandbags. A guy playing a guitar singing, Where Have All the Flowers Gone? This was captured on CBS News, you know, and we used to do reporting and coverage in depth. Yeah. And so just that song has got so much power and meaning to it, but also that it was a way for some community and some comfort for these guys under siege. It speaks volumes about music.
Yeah. Bruce in Elk Mound has something. Let's go there. Bruce, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that the country music was a little bit more popular, I think, than you guys are making out. But I know one of the songs was Stand By Your Man by Tammy Wynette.
Oh, yeah.
It was a real tearjerker. And they also played a lot of the Beatles. Sure. And I think towards the end, before I left, was Hey Jude, and it was on there about hourly.
Yeah.
And the other thing of interest is they didn't play a lot of hard rock and roll at all. Like,
Nope.
Yeah,
the sites on the internet, because I think the guys out in the field were already crazy.
Bruce, thanks for calling. Comments? Yeah. Go ahead, Craig.
On the country, I'm absolutely with you on that. This is one of the things that Doug grew up in Philly. I grew up in Colorado Springs. I grew up with country, and I grew up playing it, and mm-hmm. I know it. And
there were
a ton of great country songs that were on the Vietnam Vet. You had a heavy rotation there. And on the hard rock, that was one of the places where, although censorship wasn't quite what it's made out to be, it never made the FEN, heavy rotation. But we talked to DJs who were on small stations out in the field who played a ton of it. And then on the underground radio station, that was all they played.
Yep, exactly. And it was, you know, we were the rock and roll generation. So, I mean, like I said before, the lucky thing for us, especially guys like me in the rear, is we had Creature Comforts and we had AFEN 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, transmitters from the Delta DMZ, bands coming to Vietnam, EM clubs, tapes, cassettes. So they gave us access to music. And so we found that stuff. People would, like Craig said, they were sending, you know, there was a traffic album, John Barleycorn Must Die. Cream albums. They were right there in the PX. I could just buy them. So we had all that music, but it wasn't what was prevalent either on the AFEN playlist or, you know, for a lot of guys who were, you know, out in the field.
So the guys out in the field, could they, you know, have their transistor radio, or did they have a cassette recorder that they might have taken with them?
It's a mixed bag. Out there. One of the things that came through very, very clearly, our good friend Tom Helgeson, when I asked him about what his experience was, and he was out in the field with a really tough tour, he just said, well, the music was there in his head, but he said that silence was worth $1 million a minute when you were out there. So we actually talked to one guy who talked about the way that having the music in his head interfered with him. He got Leslie Gore's song, Judy's Turn to Cry, his girlfriend's favorite song, stuck in his head when he was out doing a sniper's gig. And he said that he realized it was distracting him, and that was dangerous. Sometimes units did carry records with them, portable record player, spread it around. We have good stories about when they had the opportunity put on music and dancing in their combat boots.
We hear from helicopter pilots who are taking the troops out and up and down and out. that they could play it on the band on their radio. Yeah, there was a band on the radio that was reserved for communications, you know, critical communications. And sometimes guys would go on there and just play music.
Yeah.
Barbara in Cross Plains, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. This is kind of a hard thing to talk about. I am the spouse of a vet, Vietnam vet, who served his career in the military. And he was in Air Force ROTC here on campus 4 years. And as those 4 years got closer to graduation, we knew where he was going. Mm. The day he graduated, he was commissioned. 9 months later, he was on the ground in Vietnam. Mm. And yeah. We were married. We've been a couple of years. He talks about some of it, but in reference, if just to make it short, first I got a letter almost every day. There was a number at the top of every page, how many days were left. Mm. Yeah. And he said when he got on that plane to come home, the troops, they burst out in singing,
I want to go home.
Oh, you got to get out of this place. Yeah. Yeah.
And the one that broke my heart when he was gone was Tie a Yellow Ribbon Around That Old Oak Tree.
Tony Orlando and Dawn. Is your husband still with us or no?
Yes. Oh, he served 21 years, and he's an honorable retiree.
Glad he made it home. Tell him welcome home. And that's kind of the stories the way they are. I mean, you know, service, sacrifice, a lot of that generation. And again, like I said, you know, how we were raised as the sons of World War II vets. Your husband took that seriously.
Yeah. Barbara, thank you so much for calling. Aretha Franklin had a song that was quite popular with the guys, apparently, Chain of Fools. Let's listen to a little of that. So, how did I think I can see why it might have been popular? But
well, you know, and it's amazing, Larry, because this is again getting to what Craig talks about. It, you know, different meanings for different folks and different experiences and different circumstances and different times. I hear that song. I'm a junior in college, a small college in West Virginia, with my student deferment, which I eventually lost. And you talked about, you know, Nancy Sinatra being a strong woman. Aretha's as strong as they come.
Yeah.
She's just had RESPECT, and now she's having this. She says, if you play me for a fool, I'm just another link in your chain. I'm done with this relationship. So that's a good takeaway for that song when it was out, that she was done with this guy. Well, as Craig found out, yeah, and we found out,
that you can hear that chain is going to break multiple ways. It was also a Black Power song, talking about, yeah, okay, we've been, yeah, told that the dream is going to come, but it ain't coming. So this chain is going to break. We're going to rock out. But in military terms, the chain referred to the chain of command, the sense that black soldiers got to a point, particularly after Dr. King's assassination, where they said, you can fight your own war. We're going to stay here. We're going to be in our soul hooches, and we're only going to do minimal cooperation. Now, that wasn't everybody by any means, but it was a real thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it was saying the chain of command is broken. So Aretha was speaking to that, too.
Keith and Kiwani, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Keith.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. So I was on a helicopter gunship down in the Delta, and we would... So I flew out of a bigger base camp at Vinh Long, and we would have bands from the Philippines or Japan or wherever come in and play music in our clubs, and they would sing American songs in English perfectly, but you couldn't communicate with them. You couldn't speak to them or understand them. We did have an Australian band come in one time, which was just something to be able to sit down and talk with the Australian band, which we mostly understood. The other thing, most of the It seemed like most of the concerts, the songs at the end of the night, the very last song was always, "We got to get out of this place" by the Animals.
Yep, yeah. I second that emotion, Keith. I'll just say welcome home. Glad you made it. I just ditto what you said. These Filipino, Korean, and Vietnamese bands could not speak a word of English, but they could play a set list, everything from Janis to Bobby Bear to Creedence and the Animals, but not speak a word of English. I mean, more power to them, because we needed the music. And, of course, I can't say enough about the resonance and significance of the Animal song, "We Got to Get Out of This Place."
Yeah, Keith, thank you very much for calling. Visiting today with Doug Bradley, Madison-based Vietnam vet, Craig Werner, our other guest, Professor Emeritus of Afro-American Studies at UW-Madison, talking with them about the music of the Vietnam War and kind of from their book that they were able to put together, "We Got to Get Out of This Place, the Soundtrack of the Vietnam War." I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.
I'm coming home.
Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix. That's sort of, does it reflect the chaos that was going on?
Oh, yeah. And different kinds of chaos. Again, this is one of those that I remember growing up as a hippie, and Purple Haze was a term for a particular kind of LSD. You could hang out on the hill, lean back, kiss the sky, just go blissful. But,
you know, also Hendrix, the thing about Hendrix was he was a soldier. He was maybe the worst soldier in the history of the Army. He got kicked out because all he did was play his guitar. But he was airborne. So "Kiss the Sky" is what they said when they jumped out of the airplane. And so that's got a different meaning for Hendrix. The other thing about Hendrix was, getting back to the earlier caller about, you know, acid rock and the heavy rock, that sound was there, and the thing about Hendrix's music is it sounded like Vietnam. If you listen to a song he's got called Machine Gun, or just what he did with the Star Spangled Banner at Woodstock, everything is in there, you know, just weaponry and helicopters and call to arms. So sonically, Hendrix, more than I think anybody else, was the sound of Vietnam. And then there's another Purple Haze.
Yeah. I mean, all kinds of stories. But one of the meanings of Purple Haze was that they had smoke grenades where they would call people into
landing zones.
And the purple was one of the colors of that. And so the purple smoke was a part of Hendrix. Yeah, a lot of meanings.
Lynn in Pewaukee emailed us about the movie Good Morning Vietnam with Robin Williams, who was really, I thought, did a great job in that movie. She's wondering if it was based on a real Vietnam DJ, and you've got a story on that, Doug. Adrian Cronauer.
Adrian Cronauer, who, to his credit, I think, was one of the first AFVN DJs that understood what the troops wanted to hear. They didn't want to hear Guy Lombardo and Ray Conniff, you know, and any kind of pablum. They wanted to hear what they were listening to at home when they had just gotten there. They're kids. You know, so they want to hear the Temptations. They want to hear James Brown. They want to hear Elvis and the Beatles. And he changed the format with his Dawn Buster show. The funny thing for us was, because we knew, you know, how important DJs were to the morale of the troops, we interviewed a lot for the book. And they were very forthcoming, talked about the censorship, talked about the ups and downs, et cetera. So we reached out to Cronauer because he's the dean. He's the guy, right? And at that point, the movie had been successful. He'd made a lot of money. He was working with Dick Cheney, as a matter of fact. And we got a note back from his agent saying he didn't want to be interviewed by two people two guys from the People's Republic of Madison. I was like, wait, this is a book about music and memory, and it's serving vets. But hey, if it was enough of his life in the public record, he's no longer with us, neither is Robin Williams. But that movie captured at least that. There's parts of that movie that are Hollywood that wouldn't have happened. But the music and what that meant to the soldiers and what the DJs were able to do to make those connections is a really vital story.
And to follow up on what Doug had said, one of the interesting things, as we did well over 100 public events built around the book, we had no cases where we had a political fight break out over Vietnam, which is pretty much unthinkable. You wouldn't get that at some point. But the music provided a way for people to process it and share it together. We were in Memphis, and we had a situation where a black vet from Memphis and a white vet from Memphis, which came from different worlds before they went there, realized at the event that they had been there together. It overcame a lot of differences. You know, that the music does something that our political memory seems incapable of.
Yeah. Jerry in Cross Plains emailed, as a Vietnam vet, I remember laughing a lot with the AFRS TV show Good Morning Vietnam. While not a song, it sure was well-liked by the troops, including me.
On laughter. Do you want to talk about it?
I feel like I'm fixing to die. It's just, you know, Larry, when you're in... You know, I feel like I'm fixing to die is on the soundtrack, the Country Joe and the Fish song. And it's like we were both astounded. I mean, we knew the song. We knew Joe's presentation at Woodstock, which is a little rougher, a little raw. So we wanted to get to the source of this. We went and interviewed him in San Francisco. And when we got off, he met us at the BART Center. And we got off the train. The first thing he said to us was, I'm a veteran first and a hippie second. Well, who knew Joe McDonald was a vet? Well, not a Vietnam vet, but he'd been in. He intended that song as gallows humor. And it gets to this point of when you're in this most critical situation, when you are about, you know, an inch away from losing it, laughter sometime can, you know, bring you back. And so gallows humor was very prominent in Vietnam. Laughter, I laughed a lot in Vietnam because what else was I going to do? I was going to go crazy. I was going to go nuts. I was going to scream. So yeah, when I think about music and what it did, but I also think about what laughter helped us do. Those were most important.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of I Feel Like I'm Fixin' to Die by Country.
Come on, all of you big strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam, way down yonder in Vietnam. Put down your books, pick up a gun. We're gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, Joe said that he still gets hate mail for that, people considered it disrespectful to the veterans, but he said never got that from the veterans.
We gung-ho guys who used that as cadence for their troops, you know, and made them march to that song. You know, guys that would have had nothing in common with Joe's politics. So, again, that's what music can do. It's that, as Craig said, it's that kind of bridge. It's that kind of authentic, centering element. And boy, you know, the thing was, Larry, you know, we're talking to people 40 years after they've been home. A lot of them had never talked about the experience, and we would ask them what their song was. We'd find out about the experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have Creedence Clearwater, Fortunate Son. Have we played Fortunate
Son? We opened
it. That's right. We opened it with it.
Seems like a long time ago.
Yeah, there we go.
Just to remind you.
How can I forget?
Oh, I named that tune in two notes.
We haven't done. Yeah, that's really it. You know right away what's coming. What's Going On by Marvin Gaye?
Wow.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, brother.
brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today.
Yeah. Oh, so who did Gay write this song about?
He wrote about his brother Frankie, who was a radio operator in Vietnam. You know, they grew up singers. They sang with Harvey and the Moonglows. Marvin gets to, you know, Motown and becomes their biggest solo artist. Frankie Gay gets he's in Vietnam. And, you know, we couldn't text you later. You're reading emails. You're getting phone. We couldn't do that in Vietnam. We wrote letters. That was the way we connected. So Frankie was writing letters to mom and dad, bearing his soul. It was therapy. I know when I wrote letters home, it was therapeutic, you know, what was bothering me. And he was talking about what was going wrong in Vietnam. Marvin asked the parents to pass the letters on to him and read them and was very concerned, met his brother when he got out. And really, if you listen to the entire album, what's going on, all the songs, one song leads into the other, it never ends. It's about a Vietnam vet coming back home. Is America going to be there for me? Am I going to make it home? Am I going to do drugs? Am I going to find God? It's a remarkable, remarkable album. And it's Marvin Gaye's way of helping his brother to come home and the rest of us to get back from Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of our good friends, Art Flowers, African-American vet from Memphis, talked about when he came home from Vietnam, he was angry. And he spent a lot of time just getting stoned, getting drunk. And he said that he was just burning himself out. And then he was actually at a dorm room in the University of Tennessee with a woman he'd met. And he heard what's going on. And he said that once he heard that, he said, he's talking to me. And he said from that point on, it changed his life. And he said, I cannot just blow it away. He said from that point on, he was going to be a warrior for the humanity of his black brothers and all humanity, and that album saved him.
The song that you consider the Vietnam anthem is The Animals, We Gotta Get Out of This Place.
We gotta get out of this place.
And we're going to get out of this place in a couple minutes, Larry.
Yeah.
I can't thank you enough for having us and for folks listening. But again, it's the lyric of the song, not written about Vietnam, not intended for Vietnam. It was written by Cynthia Weil and Barry Mann as a follow-up to the Righteous Brothers. It was a Get Out of the Ghetto song. It ended up in sheet music over in England, where Alan Klein and Mickey Most gave it to the Animals. And they took it as their song. They're leaving Newcastle. They got to get out of this place, not like their daddy's in bed or dying, and they're going to become rock and roll stars. But it just, again, the lyric, the power of the song, as Craig said, if you were a cover band and you couldn't play that, we chase you off the stage. You had to play that song in front of the guys. And it's kept that connection all these years because, you know, those that didn't get back and those of us that did, we rally around that song.
And, man, this has been an interesting and powerful show today, guys. And I want to thank you both very much for being with us. And we'll probably be playing this song, replaying this show down the road here. I'm pretty sure of that. Thank you both very much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, man. Doug Bradley and Craig Werner. And the book, I'd mention it again. The title is We Gotta Get Out of This Place. The soundtrack of the Vietnam War. Coming up, we're going to be talking about a new book. I heard there was a secret chord, Music as Medicine. That's next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.
Now, my girl, you're so young and pretty. And one thing I know is true.